is quite common that your mental radiator overheats, especially when you're caught in a fantastic traffic jam on the psychic Long Island Expressway. It's metaphysical, I believe. When you're dealing with metaphysics, you have to also deal with reality for, you know, just for starters. I mean, you know, if you think you've got problems, I have to salute a victim of our time. You know, I'm sorry, I forgot what I was about to say about the watching Watergate. I'll tell you one thing that I'm impressed with in Watergate. Again, I'm impressed with the fact that when you're pushed to the wall, everybody is equally inept. I like that feeling. I really do. It's kind of a comforting feeling, you know. I think this is the one thing that bothers most people, though, subconsciously about it. It's you know, the average person thinks that guys like, say, Johnny Carson live exalted lives. Somehow they don't you know, mess around like they do. They don't stand in line at the cleaners and get hamburgers at McDonald's and turn out that they forget to get the pickle Ellie. And, you know what I'm talking about. The general sort of half-baked way that life staggers on. And it's kind of interesting to find out in the highest reaches of government that a guy get a phone call and they say, we're going to send a guy over he wants a red wig, a false nose. He also wants fake New Jersey driver's licenses, and if possible, could you give him a thing to stick in his mouth so he can disguise his voice? He'll be over at he'll pick it up at 2:00. He'll sign for it, and then when later asked, wasn't that a little suspicious? He says, no, I didn't think so. Well, that's the way most of us are. I mean, frankly, I. In fact, maybe I have too much tolerance for human frailty. I've noticed that a lot of people do not have a tolerance for human frailty unless it's their own. Their own is never disguised as never discussed as frailty. It is that he was misled. Basically, a man who has seen unbelievable frailty in his time, I have to concede that this is a human characteristic. See, what I'm really saying is that there's no such thing as the non-frail. In other words, Superman does not exist. He only exists in novels, movies, plays, and comic books. He does not exist in life. No way. And cannot exist. Not being human. I mean, being human, it's impossible for him to exist. Now, for example, I'll tell you how things happen. The human frailty. I was witness to one day. Okay, you want to hear about it? Okay. All right. It is Saturday afternoon. Now, we have to set the scene. Saturday afternoon. To begin with, your defenses are down on Saturday. Right? For one reason, Saturday... Well, let's face it. How do you think they named Saturday? All right, it was named after Saturnalia. Saturn. Saturnalia. And what is a Saturnalia? It's the next thing to an orgy. It is. I mean, you don't imagine, a big whoopee party being held on Monday afternoon. It's Saturday, friend. So Saturday is and has always been a day when your defenses are automatic. Did you notice how many of these hanky-panky things in Watergate happened on Sunday? Yeah. Now, think carefully, Gary. There were several important things where a guy says, yes, I got up and I walked out of the house and went to a payphone, and I called. It was Sunday, you see. And so I called them on the phone, and they were out in the coast, and I pasted the money under the thing, you know. And it was Sunday, really. Now, I say, for one reason, yes. That a lot of your defenses are down on those days. Why do you think the Japanese hit us on Sunday? That's right. It could have been an unbelievable failure had they tried it on Wednesday. Now, anybody who's ever been in the armed forces know the difference between Wednesday morning at 5 a.m. and Sunday morning at 5 a.m. in the barracks. I mean, it's just an absolute fact. In fact, on Sunday morning at 5 a.m. in the barracks, there's hardly anybody there, for starters. I mean, those that are in a bad mood because they didn't have a pass over the weekend, and they're sulking under the pool table in the day room. So, you know, you're not going to have any guys springing to the breach. And if they do, they will spring grudgingly and usually late. By that time, the supply room is on fire. They've already bombed the rifle range, and it's all over. Now, on Wednesday morning, another story, man. I want to tell you, when they blow that whistle at 5:15 a.m. and the day room lights up and everybody rushes to the John to shave, and it's 5:30 in the morning and you're standing in line out there, you're mad right there. And anybody that dares to come flying over to barracks in a zero had better damn well be prepared to meet his ancestor fast. Because guys would shoot at him just because he's there. Not because he's attacking you. It's just a difference. So, anyway, getting back to the story. Saturday, it was Saturday, right? Okay. I'm at this point, I am an innocent human being. We all go through a stage where we're innocent about man's frailties. And this is always the quality of the young, who believe that any time anybody made a mistake, it was because they were basically evil. I'll let you think that over for a minute. There's no such thing as an honest mistake. There's merely evil or non-evil. Not so, friends. In fact, I've looked all my life, and I can't find much evil. I wish I could find a really good evil guy sitting there cackling at his desk, you know, bribing cops. I'd love to find a guy. But I usually just find a lot of bumblers. I'm surrounded by bumblers, you know. And I certainly don't exclude myself, friend. At no point. Any possible. Because I kicked a few myself, I want to tell you. Anybody who's played third base never laughs at other people's errors. No way. You know that the National League record for the most errors made on one play was made by a third baseman? That's part of the position. Yes. Who was he? Who was he? You want to know what he did? Well, all right. First thing, it's runners on first and second, okay? Sharp ground ball to him. Well, now what did he have to do right away? He booted it, right? He picked the ball up at that point. All right, you want to hear more about this tale of woe? He picked the ball up after flailing around on the ground for a while. The runners are running like hell. And we're, for no given reason, threw it back of first base into the screen. Okay, now, he shouldn't have thrown it to first anyway, because the runners were on their way to second and third. Now, he not only committed an error of omission, he committed one of commission. So he threw it down, and at that point, the first baseman rushed back, picked up the ball, whipped it to third. What did he do to it? Okay, just what the, I remember, he's setting a record. He booted it again into the grass. He rolled around the ground, picked it up. Now, you haven't heard the last of this tale of woe. Picked it up, and by this time, the runner is on his way home. He then threw it into the screen. A second throw into the screen. Well, there was confusion at that point. He has committed how many errors? Okay, he ain't through. He is not through. At which point, the catcher runs like hell, picks up the ball. Now the second runner is now on his way to third. Our hero rushes back to third. The ball is whipped to him. It's in plenty of time to get that runner. What does he do to it? Exactly. Now he is rolling around in the ground, trying to pick it up. The runner gets up, amazed that he is safe. He lights out for home. I do not have to tell you what our hero did to conclude a stellar performance. He threw it in the dugout. Well, of course, by that time, all runners had scored. He was in a state of shock. He walked around out there, you know, and kicked the dirt. The manager came out. He did not complete. It was not over at that point. The manager came out and walked up to the mound to talk to the pitcher. Actually, it was the third baseman that he was. You don't actually go out and confer with your third baseman. You always talk with the pitcher. At which point, the third baseman got so mad at what had transpired. He walked over to the mound and said something to the manager. The manager said something back to him. The umpire came up to break it up, and the third baseman was thrown out of the game after kicking dirt on the umpire's shoes. He was fined $400. He had set a new major league record. Who was that third baseman? Now, that's true trivia. Who was that third baseman? By the way, the record still stands. It's a record that still remains happily unbroken. It was beautiful. It has, you know, everything has to work together. That's as difficult to perform as a perfect triple play. You have to have everything working right. You have to have two fairly fast runners. You have to have, but everything worked fine. And so when you play at a position where things of that type are possible, you learn many things. And when I discovered basically how frail we are and how easily we can misunderstand evil, you know what I'm going to suggest? I'm going to suggest a lot of these witnesses, when they say, well, I didn't even have any idea of this, I'm telling the absolute truth. Most of us never see evil around us. In fact, I'll never forget the day I was talking to a well-known interviewer here in town, who works on many radio and TV stations. And I spending all my life in the Times Square area, most of my adult professional life, I was talking about the fact, you know, that it is an absolute fact that almost anything can be bought in Times Square at almost any newsstand, anything. And his answer to this was, what do you mean? Well, I don't believe that. I didn't see nobody do nothing like that. I said, are you kidding? He said, no. The Toby Zero is that you're just a cynic. And I realized, no, it was not that I was a cynic. It's that there are those of us who have looked into the face of evil and have come to recognize it. Then there's the others who have looked into the face of evil and think it's their ad end. You see, and I'll tell you, it depends on what's happened to you. Most people have never had a really fast shuffle pulled on them. I mean, a really fast one. And so it is Saturday, right? This is the first day that the scales fell from my eyes. It is Saturday. I'm in fact, going to college at the time, and I'm working in a television and radio station, which, for want of a better name, I'll invent a name of a town. How about some silly name that, you know, town couldn't possibly be named that? How about Cincinnati? It's a silly name, right? So, no town would be named that, okay? Not a serious town. So, nevertheless, there I am. See, it's Saturday afternoon. Which, incidentally, even lets you, because you always think of evil at night, right? Saturday afternoon, beautiful day, sun is shining. About four or five of us are hanging around the station. Nobody's working in the offices, right? Saturday afternoon, they all got the day off, except us, way down on the bottom of the totem pole. We're working around there, me and about three or four engineers, a couple of announcers, a couple of newsmen, who prided themselves, by the way, on being totally cynical. You know, the kind of guy, no politician's going to fool me, you know, that type. Well, it was about 2:30 in the afternoon when I happened to be upstairs. The offices were on one floor, the station and the studios were on the next, right? And I go upstairs there, and it's a nice day, and a couple of guys come in. They're wearing coveralls that say Acme office furniture on the back. They've got all these green coveralls. They walk in. And one of them comes up, he got a clipboard, see? And he comes up to me and he says, hey, Mac, anybody here in charge I can talk to? And I said, well, let's see, who's in charge? Of course, that's another thing. See, nobody's really in charge on days like that. So at that point, I said, I think Watson is. And Bob Watson was the head of the news department, see? So I figured, you know, he's the ranking guy out at the hour. So I said, hey, Watson! And Watson come up, says, what do you want? And the guy says, we're from the Acme office rental company, and we're here to pick up all the old equipment. We're going to replace it with new office equipment this afternoon, and it's time to replace all the equipment. Would you sign here, buddy? And he has this sheet, see, and it's got all these things, 422 typewriters, 978 computers, 316 Ditto machines, 427 Xerox machines, all down the list. It's fantastic. And so they had all numbers, serial numbers and all that stuff. So Watson says, yeah, okay. He signs the thing. And he says, okay, listen, we'll be back about 4 o'clock. You guys mind if you leave the door open out in the front there so we can get in with the truck? So Watson says, sure. Well, these guys start going to work. They unplug all the IBM typewriters. They start unplugging all the Xerox machines. They unplug all the computers and all the stuff, and they're walking out with it. You know, they got these. They even came in with these little carts, you know, with the wheels on the bottom. I mean, you never saw more official guys in your life. And every time they pull one out, they'd look on a list and they'd check it off, you know? And, it was really a fantastic operation. Well, they cleaned out the office, the whole place, about 25 offices, you know, about 15 accounting departments. They cleaned it all out in about 45 minutes. A great big truck. They had this big green truck out in front. And it said Acme Office Rental Supplies all over the side of it in big white letters. And they just loaded all that stuff in, and away they went. Well, of course, me and Watson were watching these guys talking about, hey, you know, you guys, as long as you're here, why don't you show one of us how to change the ribbon in a typewriter, you know? We don't have no time, buddy, for God's sakes, you know? We don't do nothing with, we don't service the stuff. We just replace it, put it in, give them new stuff. And we talked to these guys for about 15 minutes. And away they went. Well, Saturday progressed, as it always does. Dreamily in the radio station, TV station. There's a certain feeling in all offices on Saturday. It's like you're swimming in a sea of lukewarm Karo syrup. And, you know, once in a while, guys would go out and get hamburgers and come back in. And we're sitting around and finally midnight arrives. The station goes off the air. And Sunday progresses in exactly the same way. None of us ever noticed these guys never came back. You know, what the hell? I don't mess around with a typewriter. The Xerox machine is not my thing, you know. They didn't steal our turntables or our microphones. That's the only way we would be bugged. So, anyway, Monday morning came. Now, remember, I'm working on the night shift, see? Monday morning came, and all of a sudden, it's about 9:30 in the morning, and I get a frantic telephone call. And on the other end of the line is this frantic voice. Shepard, get down here now! What the hell? That's all he said. He hung up. Whew. You know, I think, well, you know, all of us suspect any minute now we're going to get fired anyway. This is the way life is. Practically every... I think Nixon, all of his life has always felt one day they're going to catch up with him. And we all do. Yeah, it's only more obvious on Nixon's side. Don't put Nixon down. Everybody says, hooray, hooray, hooray. No, you too, friend. That includes you, George Plimpton. I mean, everybody has a secret fear that one day the whistle will be blown. And their basic shallowness, callowness, and total lack of being able to do what they're supposed to be doing will suddenly come out before the whole world, and they will be delegated where they should have always been, in that long line of the unemployed, right? So anyway, that voice said, Shepard, get down here now! And he hung up. What the hell? I didn't even know who it was. I just knew, get down to the station fast. We will continue this tale of evil and chicanery in 60 seconds immediately following.
They say there's a time in life for everything. For Dubonnet, the time is the 4.
Yeah. you know, you face the lions every day. You know, speaking of... I'm not going to belabor the point, but I want to tell you, this was one of the great... I think we learn our lessons gradually in life. I don't remember learning much in school except about isosceles triangles. And that has not helped me much. In the middle of an argument, I will attempt to bring up Pythagoras. I remember something about Pythagoras. Do you remember him? He was good. Yeah. He hasn't helped me much either. But these things I did definitely... I was taught these things. I was also taught... I remember a phrase, what was that phrase they used all the time in that class I was in? It was a hellish class. Hic, hike, hoke. Huius, huius, huius. Well, see, that was, I was taking Latin. And, Yeah, you know, that we had a choice of languages in this school. You could take German, you could take Latin, you could take French, and the other one was, who was the other one? Sounded kind of funny when they talked it. Huh? No. We didn't have that kind of school. No. We didn't have the problems you have in New York. We had you couldn't take Spanish. You could take other languages. I can't remember what the other one was. Greek? Well, incidentally, I might point out this was a classical high school. They were preparing guys to go to very official schools. And so you don't learn pidgin English, you know. But I had to take one or the other. So I spent one 2-week period, unbelievable 2-week period, in French. And I discovered not only could I not learn this language, I couldn't even pronounce it. They were always going, all the time. I says, oh, hell, this is no good for me. And so I quickly switched to German. And I couldn't figure out the letters. You know, their letters all look like strange-looking things with flags on the top of them. And the only one that I figured I could make it good in was Latin. And, of course, that was a sad, silly dream. And I do remember, huius, puella, hic, haec, veritas, So 4 years went by, and I got my C-, and I came to the conclusion a couple of years after I got out of school that I didn't learn anything in school. Not that would help me through life. That's why to hire a classical scholar to be in charge of the exchequer could be a classical mistake. You buy that. All right, because the Punic Wars really don't have much to do with guys walking around in the office dressed in coveralls that say Acme Office Rental Supplies. Now, you can draw a conclusion from it afterward, you know, a historical thing like Irwin is always doing. But at the time it happens, it does not quite fit. So, nevertheless, I go into the office. I figured this is the last day of my job. You know, I walk in there, there's 400 cops. And one of the shepherds here, quick! And they rush me in, and this detective sergeant sat down, you know, sitting there, and he says, sit down, buddy. And I says, yes, sir. You give me your name. My name? I said, Shepherd, you know me. I'm a 20-year-old chef here. Were you here at 2:30 in the afternoon as of August 14th last? Yeah, I was. Aha! I told you! He turns around. He says, you recognize this? And he hands me the sheet of paper with all the numbers on it. I said, yes, sir, I do recognize that. Is this Mr. Watson's signature on the bottom of that paper, or is it not? Were you present at the time that that paper was signed? Yes, and I could see Watson over in the corner. They got chains on him, manacles. He's sitting there, his eyeballs are spinning. I says, yes, I was present at the time. And at that point, two other detectives moved in. One says, did you or did you not, at the time that was signed, see anything suspicious going on in the office? I couldn't even remember what they're talking about. He says, no, I didn't see anything suspicious. You mean to tell me that you were present, buddy, when over $12,000 worth of office supplies were stolen from this office, and you did not see anything suspicious? Well, no, a couple of guys come in, you know, from Acme, and they were walking around unplugging typewriters, but I didn't see anything suspicious.
You mean to tell me it was not suspicious to you that two men would arrive and remove every typewriter, every Xerox machine, every multigraph machine, four computers, $12,000 worth of nuts, bolts, and grommets, and you did not see anything suspicious?
No, I didn't. I didn't actually.
We got another stoop here. When a guy pretends he don't know.
My God, I suddenly realized they were suspecting that I was involved in this thing. Well, I want to tell you this. It was a very hellish month. I mean, everybody around the office suspected that any of us who were there at the time were working hand in glove with the fake Acme men. That each one of us had a stash of stolen typewriters in our basement. And you know, to this, and you know what's worse? After they start hitting and hollering at you, you begin to suspect you were guilty. At which point you begin to say things like, I won't answer that. No, I refuse to answer. I want my attorney here. And I said, well, didn't you notice that those were green? Those were green coveralls they were wearing? And that the real Acme men wear blue? You mean to tell me you didn't notice? I won't answer that. I cannot answer that question. It may incriminate me. My God, I left under a cloud. And at this point, I don't know who's guilty of anything anymore. I don't know whether the devil was wrong or whether